Every Tuesday, normally at noon, we talk to Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston. We moved it up an hour today because we're going to listen to another Tom at 12 o'clock today. Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is Tom Curran. Hello, Tom.
Dale, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right, thanks. How are you?
Good. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Thomas.
Are you going to be tuned in as we are at noon today to hear what Tom Brady has to say?
Absolutely. Part of the job. Got to jump on that and try and squeeze a question or two in there. So absolutely, we'll be doing that.
You can maybe break the tie here, Tom. This is something that Dale and I disagreed with yesterday. For Bill Belichick, do you think plan A for the 2020 season was to have Tom Brady as the starting quarterback?
Depends. It really depends. I mean, it depends on if you wanted to try and wring as many wins. But there are, despite the fact that we all can subscribe to Herm Edwards' you play to win the game mentality, there are different seasons and different goals and different undercurrents to a season. If the Patriots wanted to try and wring every single win out of the 2020 season, absolutely, Tom Brady was the way to go. If the Patriots wanted to try and start looking at how to be a better team in 2021, 22, 23, this is the way to go. So that's why I've written about kind of the ambivalence of Belichick in Brady's return. It's not because he doesn't like him, although I think there's moments when he doesn't. It's not because he doesn't respect him. It's because he's an impediment to the process that absolutely positively has to go on and which now can begin.
But doesn't he have to, when the season ends, have sort of, all right, here's who I want to be the quarterback? Or, I mean, because I think I agree with you, and we've talked about this before. I thought he wanted Brady back, but just at a price. And he was prepared to move on, and that's why he didn't budge off of his price or the number of years or things like that. But you would think, as this guy who we all believe is the best coach, great roster builder, and all of this, you would have a plan for the most important position and not just leave it up to like, well, you know, if he budges off of this, we'll just go with, a backup and a fourth round pick.
I think that's a plan. I mean, I really do. I mean, every plan that you make in your personal life, me and mine, Dale and his, there's contingencies. How's it going to work? What's going to happen? How do we predict something that we don't control, which is Tom Brady and his decision-making process? If the Patriots controlled, say, for instance, let's talk about it this way. What would have happened if the Patriots did have the ability to franchise Tom Brady? Would they have done that? No, they wouldn't have. They had the ability to lock him up last year with the same contract that he just signed in Tampa Bay, despite the fact people are like, oh, Patriots would have done that deal. No, they wouldn't have.
Right.
They had the opportunity to do that in August. They passed on it. They gave him the opportunity to be a free agent. They would not have used the franchise tag on him now at $28 million plus the $13.5 million. So,
for everybody who says, well, the Patriots offered him 2 years, $53 million last August, they didn't. Because the second year wasn't guaranteed the way the Tampa contract is guaranteed.
Of course. The same way the Patriots walked out and said that Brady signed a 2 year, $63 million extension when the voidable years were 31 and 32 million and there was no expectation that was ever going to happen. It couldn't happen, literally. But for 3 hours, the national folks who are handed the news by the Patriots, Adam, Schefter, Ian, Rappaport, and Field Yates all reported, oh, Brady just got a two-year extension on his deal. No, he didn't. And then it's just over the course of the next couple hours, it became clear that that's not what happened.
Other than and I think there will likely draft a quarterback, but other than a draft, is the Patriots quarterback room set for the beginning of the season right now?
Yeah, with the qualifier that you attached. And you never know. I mean, there could be, you know, what if somebody moves on from a decent guy, you know, within the division? I can't even come up with a guy. Then I would think that they could conceivably add that. But I wrote about that yesterday afternoon. I'll retweet it for anybody who didn't see that. Just that this is their best-case scenario in many ways. And really what the best-case scenario that kind of opened up here was the Indianapolis Colts saying thanks but no thanks to Brady moving on to Rivers, which freed up Hoyer. Because of what's going to happen in this offseason, I think the designs the Patriots have are, look, Stidham's pretty good. We're expecting a huge jump, or the predictable jump that is made from year one to year two. But that is put in limbo, that jump, because we don't know if there's OTAs. We don't know if there's going to be mini camps. We don't know how much training camp there'll be. So instead of putting Stidham out there with the necessary preparation to make the year one to year two jump, now you have a fail-safe in Brian Hoyer, who can understand what's going on, who understands the system, who will get what Josh McDaniels is saying. And if you don't feel comfortable putting Jared Stidham out there at the beginning of the year, it's not because Stidham sucks. In my mind, the potential is great that Stidham is going to have a very compromised offseason. And don't put him out there to get run over in the first 4 to 5 games just to prove a point that he's ready to go. He's ready to succeed, Tom.
If the price is low enough, should there be any interest in Cam Newton or Jameis Winston?
I don't think so. I really don't. Rip it off. Rip that Band-Aid off. Ugh. I mean, you just moved on from Gostkowski. You've moved on from Daron Harmon. You've moved on from Brady. You didn't jump in on Van Noy. Just oodles of decisions made, indicating to me that, as I wrote in the column, this will be like the closest thing to the 2000 season without most likely the 5-11 record. They have to do it. They haven't drafted. They got two guys that you could arguably say other teams would covet in the last 5 drafts. Two. Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney. If you want to say Isaiah Wynn and Jarrett Stidham, okay, that's fine. But there's no other guys from 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19 who other teams would say, wow, if we could get that guy in here, he'd be starting right away.
I know, according to Brian Hoyer's agent, he's been assured he can compete for the starting job, and I'm sure in a real sense there's a competition for every job. But the acquisition of Hoyer indicated to me that the Patriots are ready to hand the reins to Jarrett Stidham come August at training camp.
I agree. And that, yes, but that with all those qualifiers attached that I mentioned as to how this offseason goes, with how much COVID-19 cuts into the preparation that he can go through. Because, you can wake Hoyer up at 3 in the morning and say, get in the huddle, and he'll know what to do. Stidham not going to be in the same boat. Stidham, I think, is a better, obviously, quarterback. But the interesting thing is, if you think back, Stidham really didn't, quote, beat out, unquote, Brian Hoyer in camp last year. Hoyer had a better first game than Stidham, a great first game in the preseason. Second game, Stidham played better than Hoyer. And then after that, the Patriots said, we know what Brian Hoyer does. Let's give Stidham as much rope as we can. Again, an acknowledgement of the situation that existed with Brady. We've got to get this guy reps. And when Hoyer was let go, that to me is an admission that, okay, it's not Jarrett Stidham is better necessarily if we started him right now than Brian Hoyer, but he's going to be better because he's 23 or 24 and Brian's 35. So you don't keep him around when you need to have Gunnar Olszewski, so you cut Brian.
Is there, I mean, it's hard to know, again, because we don't see the practices, and that's really all the time the backup quarterbacks really get. And it's also tough, like we were playing audio of Devin and Jason McCourty talking about, how good Stidham is. But again, it's their teammate, so it's hard to get a real sense of what's true, what's not true. But what can you gather after 1 year on the team comparing Stidham's 1 year, Jacoby Brissett's 1 year, and Jimmy Garoppolo's 1 year? Like where those guys were at, and how does he compare to those two?
That's a great question. It really is. It's really hard to answer, and it's best that's something that I start working on, really, with some of the guys, who experienced all three. I would imagine that Stidham was probably better than Garoppolo at the same juncture. One guy played at Eastern Illinois. The other guy played at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And A&M, was it A&M? No, Baylor.
Baylor first and then Auburn, yeah.
Yeah, so Eastern Illinois is Eastern Illinois. All you have to do is watch the highlights. They're ground level from the sideline shots, some of them, because he wasn't playing at the same level. Not his fault. God bless him. He made the best of it, as did Tony Romo. And he's a very good starting quarterback in the league. But I think Stidham is probably ahead of him. But this is where it's pivotal. This is where it's critical. And the interesting thing is, how does Stidham perform without Brady ahead of him? Brady could have crushed Garoppolo's spirit. You know, he could have been in a position where Garoppolo was non-competitive and just cowered, and he never did. I don't think Stidham was viewed the same way Garoppolo was by Brady, but now he's lost that guy to study under and develop a great long-term relationship with, even though I think there was a relationship. So a lot of things are going to enter into it. But I think it's a great question that's really hard to answer.
Yeah. In the 20 years of Bill Belichick's tenure here, he's really had two kickers. He had Adam Vinatieri for the first half, and the last 14 years he's had Stephen Gostkowski. I made the point earlier that I think Gostkowski is underappreciated by Patriots fans, and as Rich correctly pointed out, probably just because he's not Adam Vinatieri.
I agree, and he's definitely underappreciated, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that he didn't make a true signature kick until the 2018 Super Bowl. Really, when you think about it, it's crazy how infrequently he had opportunities to win big games. Now, in 2013, I thought he was the best kicker in football, and he won games for them. And he and Justin Tucker over that period of time from like 11 through 15 or 16 were the best in football, but it's hard to erase those misses that he had that remain somewhat indelible. People forget about Vinatieri's misses in the Super Bowl or hooks or the fact that his percentage wasn't as good as Gostkowski's because of those overarching kicks that he made later in those games. But, you know, you look at the 2015 Super Bowl and the missed extra point after having not missed one since 2006, and you lose by 2 points, that leaves a friggin' dent. It leaves a dent. And I think that's what people look at. It's all of us, media, fans, coaches, the level of a little bit spoiled by the success rate of, you know, a 95% foul shooter, and sometimes he misses, and he missed a couple times in key moments. Still, you're not going to find anybody but Justin Tucker that you would rather have, especially kicking in the friggin' elements. I mean, that's the thing, is kicking in the elements that long and that accurately, ridiculous.
You know him as well as anybody, Tom. How is Julian Edelman dealing with the fact that Tom Brady is not here anymore?
I haven't talked to him.
I don't know if he's taking calls.
His dad, who I got to know really well when I worked on the book with Julian in 2017, his dad called me. I see Frank Edelman. I said, Frank, Tommy, how you doing? Not good. Pretty sad over here.
Oh boy.
It's not the COVID. I mean, it's different. I mean, this is tough. So I had to talk him off the ledge for the next 5 minutes. But that's speaking from a fan's perspective,
right?
In relating that, you know, he's not parents, siblings, relatives, whether it's Anna Horford or Tom Brady Sr. or Frank Edelman, on down the line, they are not always reflective of what the player's sentiment is. They're closer to a fan's sentiment and then obviously a family's sentiment too. You know, you want your best for your kid. And it's not because Frank Edelman made that call that, we're never going to be, I'm never going to go to another Super Bowl. Probably is right.
yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't want to read too much into that. But I think if you're Edelman, he caught 100 passes last year, which is astounding when you look at how pummeled he was throughout the course of the season.
Yeah.
That he couldn't lift one arm. He still caught 100 passes for a one-dimensional, you're the only answer out there offense. It's astounding. I think he'll still be a good player, very good player, in 2020.
But I also wonder with Edelman, and I know he's one of these guys that is going to want to play football forever, and he's just, you know, he loves the game so much. But his entire career, he's been on a Super Bowl contender. So I feel like, and I could be wrong, it's probably easier to play through a concussion when your team's mm-hmm. great, or to play through a broken arm or whatever it is when your team's great. You have the greatest quarterback ever. You're fighting for a Super Bowl versus, yeah, maybe we squeeze out 9-7. Maybe we make it to the playoffs. I feel like, not that he wouldn't put his body through it again,
right.
But man, that's going to be a whole different feeling for a guy that's always been on a great, great team.
Yeah, and when you think about it, okay, well, what's his recourse? He's signed through 2021. Right. He's not the kind of guy who would ever, I know this, he's not the kind of guy, in my estimation, who would walk in and say, Bill, I don't want to be part of this. He would think that that was the coward's way out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't foresee that happening, but again, I'm not in his shoes. I think there's probably a segment of him that would say, do I want to do this at 34?
Yeah, right. To your point about ripping the Band-Aid off, and maybe Julian's thinking about this as well, but to your point, if Brady were here this coming year, if he had signed a deal, if he had caved, as some people thought he was going to do, they weren't probably going to get to the Super Bowl anyway, were they?
I keep going back to the fact, Dale, that they lost to the four best teams in the AFC by convincing scores, and then also got their ass kicked by the worst team in their own division in a game that mattered. I just didn't see that happening. And the year before, they lost to five non-playoff teams. So the lightning in a bottle captured in 2018 in the final five games after they lost to Pittsburgh was great. But I think it also really muddied the waters, don't you think, sometimes, as to what the Patriots really were heading toward? That five-game stretch. Think about that. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. That five-game stretch really kind of, God bless them, they did it. Defense was great. They got great matchups in the playoffs with, you know, the cover three Chargers, and they survived Kansas City, and they beat the hell out of Jared Goff, but they weren't what you'd call a great Super Bowl-winning team.
One of the Vegas websites put out their over-under win totals for the upcoming season, and I was shocked they had both Tampa Bay and New England at 9. And maybe it's knee-jerk reaction. Maybe it's looking at the current rosters, and so much can change with the draft and other trades and everything. But I feel like the Bucs are going to fly over 9, whereas the Patriots, it's probably more right around there. That's a tougher bet. Could go under, could push, maybe over. But I was surprised to see that they had the same number.
Yeah, it's astounding. But as we know, what they're trying to do is attract money,
right,
and not lose too much money. And, you know, that 9, I mean, when you look at what the Patriots special teams and defense did to prop up and win games for them, there were probably 3 or 4 in which, you know, Philadelphia, Dallas, those were games that were
Buffalo
in large part, the last Buffalo game.
Yeah.
No, the first one. Okay.
The 16-10. I think it was 16-10. That was one of the first games I remember where Brady was really kind of sad in the post game, and it was an ugly, ugly game. Where you're like, man, Buffalo's tough. And that was 16-10. That one felt more like defense, special teams.
Oh yeah, the Jonathan Jones knockout game.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think that you're right. I mean, Tampa Bay had, and I've been using the wrong statistic. I've been saying 38. It was actually 35. Interception / lost fumbles by Jameis Winston. So 35 possessions ended with the other team having the ball via a mistake by the quarterback.
Yeah, and a handful of those were returned immediately for scores.
Yeah, and that's bad. That's not what you're looking for, and Brady doesn't do that a lot. Again, once in a while you'll see it. But what about the Miami game? Okay, all right. Yep, that happened.
Yep, sure did.
So we'll see. Did I ever tell you the story about that Miami game, what happened in that, on that play?
Actually,
kind of funny.
You might go ahead, do it. Say it again. Yeah.
All right. I'll make it snappy. So you look at that play, and you're like, what the hell was that? You know, we overthrew Edelman. It just had no shot. So I said, so what happened? I talked to someone close. I said, well, he got to the line of scrimmage, and he looked over there, and both Sanu and Myers were in the wrong spot. So if one was in the wrong spot, he was going to try, and it was a third down play, I think. He was going to try and fix it, and he said, well, I'll just see what they do at the beginning of the play. So takes a snap, goes back. It looks as bad as he thought it was going to. So then he swiveled his head all the way around and went to throw to Edelman and just it had no shot because Edelman was an afterthought on the play. And I think there was somebody else was in the flat, Bolden or White or somebody. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even tell who it was going to. And that's why you saw Edelman with his hands at his sides, not even move to chase that down. Just staring at Brady going, why is the ball coming over here?
Yeah, this isn't supposed to happen. Yeah.
That's game 17. Week 17. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on in a pivotal, critical game. And you can say, well, hell, Tom, ride it out. Make a play. Figure it out with those two. You know, be adaptable. Still, I'm not saying Brady's absolved and says, okay, well, you're allowed to throw a pick six happens. But that's what we're talking about. Anyway, I'm going on too long.
But with and with this offseason, the most unusual of all offseasons, where there will likely be no OTAs, there will likely be no mini camp. As you said, there may be a delay to the start of training camp. I'm not sure how I'm going to expect that, Mohamedson, who's hurt right now anyway, but N'Keal Harry's suddenly going to develop some knowledge of the playbook that he didn't have in week 17 of the season.
Right. Well, what do you guys think of the OTA situation that is certainly probably going to unfold if there are OTAs and Brady's going to be fully involved? I understand where people look at it on, a context-free level and say, well, that's nice. Maybe if he showed up here. My feeling on the OTAs is, and I don't think that, I think he should have been more clear and stopped using perhaps the alibi of, I want to spend more time with my family, mm-hmm. and called it like it was. I'm not going to make $15 million, half of what Aaron Rodgers is making, and show up for the voluntary stuff. It's like you guys being paid less than everybody else at the station.
That's correct.
And then coming in for Sunday meetings on how to perfect your craft.
Right.
You're not going to do that.
So I always thought it was a bad look only because he was the only quarterback that didn't go. And you're right. There are plenty of guys that make more than him and maybe plenty that shouldn't make more than him. But I didn't like that. But it was a really dumb argument following the first year he skipped them because they won the Super Bowl. But then the second year, you're like, well, N'Keal Harry is a first-round pick. This is the first time they've ever taken a first-round pick wide receiver. And I know it's not a lot of time, but it's extra time. And it, at the very least, can't hurt. So I kind of wish that he was there for that, but I didn't. It was hard to make a big deal out of it. You sounded like a hot take guy because they just won the Super Bowl with him skipping it. But I thought the rookie and the younger guys, Jacoby Myers even, made it look a little worse.
And I was told, prior to him signing with Tampa that it could not happen again this year. It was creating too many issues. It was costing them. But again, Dale, I get it. It's being, stubborn. It's stomping your feet. It's crossing your arms and saying, I am not coming in. I'm not coming down. But I get it. I'm not going to work. I'm going to work to rule if you're going to pay me, if you're not going to give me the money that I want.
Except his entire career here, we've always been kind of led to believe that it's not about the money.
It's not about the money, but it could be about the treatment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not about the money.
Yeah, appreciation. I got you.
Well, we'll be listening.
It's a good conversation. I'll see you guys.
We'll be listening to the Tom Brady press conference at the top of the hour just to hear your voice.
Here's my question, and this is simple because you can't sit there and just – there's no reason to ask. Do you know how you build? Not going to help.
But do you?
My question that I'm going to ask is, what was your motive? Because he's never said it. What is your main motivation for wanting to be a free agent this offseason?
Yeah. How forthright do you think he's going to be? Or is it going to be one of these guys that...
I think he'll be pretty forthright.
Okay. I hope so.
Is that a crap question?
No, that's a good question. I'm interested in the answer. I hope
you get in.
Yeah, hopefully you line up in the queue. Hopefully they say, let's go to Tom E. from NBC Sports Boston, and then you can ask that one. But I wonder if it's going to be one of these, like, if this was Belichick, and he'll get his opportunity at some point, it's going to be all about 2020, which is going to be kind of lame. It's going to be all about Mike Evans, all about Bruce Arians. You're like, okay. Or does he allow... just one last, what was going on in New England at the end? I really hope we get that.
All right, Tom, thanks.
I don't know. We babbled too long. Thanks, guys.
Good,
appreciate it.
Good segment,
Talk
Tom. Thank you.
Later. Thanks. Bye. Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us.